Welcome, everyone, to Conversations on Learning. This is Barbara Bray. We are going to have a wonderful time today talking about learning with a wonderful guest, Andrew Bray. Hello, everyone. We are here at the, I'm not sure of the title yet. That's one fun thing that I get to do is see how this works and have fun. So I'm so lucky today. I am here with an amazing voice coach, actor, musician, and he just happens to be my son, Andrew Bray. Hi, Andrew.
Hi there. How's it going?
I love that you're able to be here with me today. And what I'd love to ask you is to tell just a little bit about yourself and why you're so interested in voice and why it means a lot to you for people to be able to share and also be able to tell their story.
Well, I'd be happy to. So, the first thing I should probably share with you is what I do. I work right now, among other things, as a voice coach. I also work as a music director. I'm also an actor. I also am a beekeeper, and I'm also a beekeeping instructor. And so I know that's not a lot, but of course that's not a lot. So I guess you could say in the end, I'm a freelancer.
We're doing a test right now, honey.
Yeah. Oh, and for the folks listening, we have a third guest, which is my father. Oh, I'm afraid we've scared him off.
Yes.
We'll have to put him on a future podcast.
That's right.
But yeah, so I work as a, I guess you could say, a freelance instructor that works in the arts. And on a side project, I also work in the amazing field of beekeeping.
What got you into that? That's so exciting.
Well, actually, I don't know how much you know about this. I got started 5 years ago. And it began when I was in burnout mode. Until recently, I've been the kind of a theater artist that would work from project to project to project and not do a very good job of taking care of myself. So those few times that I had even a week off between projects, I really milked those. Or rather, I would just lounge about the house and catch my breath. One of those times, I had a couple of weeks off, and I was actually visiting you. I was visiting my folks, and in our backyard, our old backyard, we have this old decrepit apricot tree that I remember it fruiting once. Like, we had one year where we made tons of jam, and it was amazing, so good. But every other year was kind of a dud year. So I was visiting that year. It was, I think, April, and like I like to do, go into the backyard and look at all of the foliage and whatnot. And I noticed that on the tree was tons of little apricotlets, tiny little baby apricots. And I was excited about that. And I think I went to you, could have been to Deb, I think I went to you. And I said, oh my gosh, have you noticed there's all these apricot trees, the tree's coming back to life. And you said, well, yeah, we had new neighbors move in and they're beekeepers. And it kind of sparked something in me. And then I went back up to Portland where I live and I had about a week more of free time. And because I'm always working on projects, I don't know how to do nothing with that time. So one of the first things I did is I did a Google search, beekeeping stores, and there was one really close to my house and I walked in and it turned out to be, because it's Portland, a natural alternative beekeeping store, where they do alternative hive styles. For folks who don't know, there is one particular style of beehive that has dominated the beekeeping industry since the 1850s. It's called the Langstroth hive. It has these frames on the inside that the bees attach their comb to. It's really convenient. But only recently some newer styles of beehives have become available. And so this is one of the stores that was producing those. So I went in there, I met the people, I asked a million questions, and then I looked at the price tag and realized that there was no way in heck that I was going to be purchasing this anytime soon. So I went home, I went onto Craigslist, and I said, where can I find cheap, sustainable cedar? And I ended up building my own beehive.
Oh, wow.
And then connected with the local beekeeping community, I received a swarm, which I installed. I thought I'd be clever and not wear any beekeeping equipment because there are a lot of beekeepers out there that use no safety gear, and I desperately want to be one of those. But it's been proven that I can't do that. And that first day, I got 4 bee stings on my face in about 10 seconds, the second I dropped the bees into the colony. A trial by fire or some kind of hazing, I guess, into the world of beekeeping. Since then I've been much more respectful of the power of bees. And I love it. I teach classes once every month or so at the same beekeeping store where I first visited. And I'm a private beekeeping consultant, got 6 beehives in my backyard. And I have honey from my bees that I encourage my voice students to put in their tea whenever they're visiting my home voice studio.
Okay. I just have to stop you for a second because we were going to talk about voice and voice students. And now you started a whole new thing about teaching beekeeping, which is so, you know, it's a wonderful thing because I work with teachers and I work with students around the world, and everything can be an avocation or an experience or something that could be something you want to do if you only have the opportunity mm-hmm. like you did. Mm-hmm. And I love it that you, I mean, well, I'm your mom, but that's beside the point.
Don't tell anybody.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. When you do these conversations, you always find out something new about somebody, even if you're related. It's kind of nice if they can open up and share. And one of the things that would be fun is to actually have you put your story together, like you just did, about being a beekeeping teacher and how you got to that. Because I see so many kids who want to go with something they're passionate about, and they may not even know about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that's helped me a lot, and I can actually see it in this particular example of learning to be a beekeeper and then progressing from that to being a beekeeping instructor, is that because of the schooling I got and because of the principles that you fed into my childhood, I really got excited about the idea of sharing knowledge. And that's actually something that has made me a more aggressive learner. When I'm learning something, I'm not just learning it. I imagine that as I'm picking up the knowledge from somebody, that I'm then I have to teach it to myself. And so the first student I'm teaching is actually me. And I found that little philosophy, which I honestly hadn't put a lot of conscious thought into until really recently, has helped the learning stick. And it's made me an excited agent for that topic, whatever it may be. And that seems to have pervaded a lot of elements of my life. And I think that actually began, as young as the times when I was, when you asked me to help out, a clay animation class, when I was in middle school, to teach other middle schoolers how to do this thing that together you and I had figured out how to do with our old VHS cameras.
Yeah. I mean, I saw that when you were young, because you always wanted to help other kids, but I didn't know what, you know, you had so many talents that it's kind of hard to know what's going to be the best for you. And what I like is that you've got your hands in so many things where you're not only creative and coming up with new ideas, you're also helping others in all of those worlds. Everything you're doing is that you're, and when you help others, what I've seen is you're constantly learning also.
Well, it's cool that you can see that too. I mean, that's, that's one of the things that I get excited about. To the potential listeners that are out there. One of the things I'm always giggly about is when you are so excited about what it is you're teaching or what it's something you've figured out, and you become become a human giggle when it's something you're really excited about, and and that enthusiasm is so important. I remember hearing this, and I was really torn by this when I went to high school. I remember hearing, speaking with some of the teachers, I'd gotten to know some of them on a personal level. And there was one particular teacher who found out that his philosophy of teaching was that any teacher, he thought that any teacher, any good teacher should be able to teach any subject because they can get themselves, they have the skills of being a teacher, and they can use those skills to communicate that knowledge. And I was, I understand that better now. I still feel like it's so much easier or so much more successful to be leading or coaching folks in something that makes you passionate. Yes, I think some of the best teachers can manufacture or foster that passion for something that they teach, but they may not be juiced about to the point where they can get excited about it. And I think that's a truth for some teachers, but nevertheless, I don't know if I really attest to his philosophy. If you can't live in the passion of what it is you are trying to communicate, then the ambivalence about that may also be taught to your students.
Well, one of the things that we're finding is that when you look at knowledge, all the knowledge is there now. It's all on Google, or it's available at your fingertips. Mm-hmm. The problem is teachers have always had to be the expert, the content experts, but you don't need to be now. What you need to be able to do is help students be able to find what they need to know, be able to know what to do with it, be able to know how to share what they learned. And all those skills, sometimes we don't teach that. Teachers themselves tend to be the ones that are told to provide the content and feed the, you know, the kids with everything. And really, like that teacher told you, if you do it right, they search for the knowledge, they assimilate it, they dissect it, they ask the right questions, and then they try to figure out how they want to learn those things.
Yeah.
And it's like you with beekeeping. You didn't know until you actually went in and did it.
Yeah, I hear you.
I am loving this talk.
I'm glad too.
I am really loving this. This is what I want for all of my conversations with people, is to build the same kind of enthusiasm that you and I are doing. And definitely will have more conversations with you, Andrew, because I feel like one of the things that I love about, I know you, is that you have that empathy for other people. And I think empathy is really important for every teacher and student, because if you can feel what the other person is feeling, or actually get in their shoes, and then you can really relate to them, it just makes it so, it's a caring, compassionate environment. And I think that's what everyone needs when they're trying to learn, you know.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned the empathy thing. I mean, like we discussed, I am also an actor, and I'm also a passionate acting instructor as well. And one of the elements that I was introduced to in the training and it's maybe kind of a familiar idea to even non-actors, is the idea that to be an actor, you have to be able to get in the shoes of your character. And that also means you need to get in the shoes of a person that may not be somebody you would like. Maybe you're playing a villain. Maybe you're playing something that's so unlike you. But the only way to do it right is to figure out a way to see the world from their perspective, even if you don't agree with it morally or whatnot. When you get to work as an actor regularly, you're flexing that empathy muscle. And one of the challenges as an actor is actually to turn that off, to be able to be done with the work and to keep up the barriers that you need in order to get by in a difficult and challenging world. And that may be one of the reasons why we're so familiar with the trope of the troubled famous actor, because those poor people, they don't have much privacy, and that's just no fair. But even for actors that aren't in the public eye, they work so hard to be open to the world all the time. And that's a great thing to do in principle. And yet there's times when you need to be able to turn that off so that you can protect yourself from the challenging elements out there.
Well, I know we have to go pretty soon, but I want to just say one thing about teachers is that it's a difficult profession. Mm-hmm. They have so much on their plate, and then with all the mandates and everything on top of it, and they have to cover the curriculum and the standards and teach to the test and all of that. It's almost like we have to figure out how we can shake things up a little bit so they have that same passion again, because the kids really need that. And the whole idea of the conversations I want to have is how we can bring the passion back. And so I just figured out a name for the show.
What?
Bringing Passion Back.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Okay.
And so this kind of conversation right now is perfect for our first show. I think we did it. We did our first show. and I think this is the way I want to do it. And I hope people will see it. And then we can write a little bit about what we're doing. But I think this is the power of it, is tell what is your passion and what you want to do, and even your problems, and maybe some things will come out of it. So
got it.
Love
yeah.
it. Thank
this is
you
great.
So much.
This Thank you too. Fun. This has been a pleasure. I'm excited.
Me too. So I'm going to say goodbye for now, but we're going to come back at another time.
Excellent.
Okay. Thank you so much, Andrew.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us today on Conversations on Learning. And if you are passionate about learning, please subscribe to this podcast.